this new operating system, Vista as well. Install it.
I think that's the best advertisement for life.
Okay. Well, hopefully I'm not going to have any ghosts. Okay, so this is the title of my talk. So how do we make a pointer out of this?
The yellow button.
Wow. Okay, good. So basically, this talk is not about the anthropic principle, so do not leave right away. I will try to address the so-called problem, the major problem in cosmology, and stuff that I'm going to talk about was discussed with people like Alex Lincoln, Andrew Linda, Raphael Dusso. Of course, they're not going to agree with what I say, but that's what I've learned from them. So here's the outline of my talk. Or game plan, since I have a soccer background. So with a quick introduction, I'm going to go to this very painful procedure of introducing the anthropic principle. But I promise to give you a drug so that if you are allergic to this concept, you will survive for the rest of the talk. There are basically two approaches currently undertaken to solve the measure problem in cosmology, which actually followed from this anthropic principle. One is a global approach, which Rankin and Linder often used, and the other one is more recently formulated, so-called local approach. And of course, it's hard for me to follow both paths at the same time because I'm a classical speaker, so I'll choose this path. And there will be two new measures that I'll formulate. One is which leads directly from the global approach, and one which is a consequence of the local approach. So the Sleeping Beauty will wait for the dessert. Again, if you fall asleep, you will wake up by this discussion. Okay, so why study all this? Well, one of the greatest discoveries of theoretical physics, of course, is inflation. And despite of all of the successful predictions that it gave us, there are problems. And it was very shortly realized after the discovery that there is a so-called measure problem in cosmology, because the Chernow equation basically creates an infinite space-time with an infinite number of observers. And how to put a measure on them is not a trivial question, non-trivial problem. But of course, it was only a few people were interested in this in the early days. Now, after string theorists all of a sudden said that there is a huge number of vacua. Lots of papers appeared on this subject in the recent years. So basically, the landscape picture, together with inflation, gives you eternal inflation. And it would be good if we could understand what is what can we make out of this. OK, so to understand the anthropic principle, I think that it's useful to study this paradox, paradox of Chernow equation. Well, this is a plot of a moving coordinate versus time. So as time goes on, basically for each constant time slice, you have more and more volume. And those are the bubbles of a new phase that are produced on the background of the old phase. And you should keep in mind that, again, as you go further, there are more and more space there. It was proved by the Lankin, Garriga, and Guth, like 5 years ago, that inflation is semi-eternal, so there is a beginning. And if we add some finite time t after this beginning, then we can slice the entire space-time into the regions from 0 to t, from t to 2t, and so forth. And then, mysterically, all of a sudden, we live in the first out of these regions. And why is that? Why are we so atypical? So when I asked this question to Alex Valenti, his response was, well, all observers have the same problem. Well, I don't know. In Soviet Union, everybody had the same problem, but for some people, it was not satisfactory. So I'm not happy with this answer. Now, Slava Mukhanov said that this is all crap and inflation is not semi-eternal. Okay, well, with this I can leave. But my understanding is that probably what we're missing is that we do not have a very good definition of a typical observer or a random observer. Now, basically, they do not exist, as I'll show on the next slide. Yes, go ahead.
By what measure is T small?
It doesn't matter. So take synchronous gauge, any gauge at all. Okay, we live at some finite time T from this initial surface. There is infinitely many regions of the same size on. We live in the first one. Okay, so you like the lengthening explanation. Okay, fine. I'm not happy with this, and as you will see, why. So okay, so what is an entropic principle? Or from my perspective, mediocrity principle. So basically, Alex Rankin said, well, we must observe what a typical or a random observer would observe. But there is a major problem with this attitude, because the total number of observers is infinite. It's a countable infinity, but it's infinity. So to study it, we can just consider a set of natural numbers, which is as good as any other countable set. And if probability of choosing number n is the same for all n, then the sum of all integers of pn is either 0 if our constant is equal to 0, or infinity if the constant is not equal to 0. So this proves, on the other hand, of course, the total sum must be normalized to 1. So this proves that you cannot choose a random object from the countable, infinitely countable set of objects. So a random observer is ill-defined. Okay. If you, of course, one could say, why worry about the infinity? Let's take like huge number of observers, like billion of them. But that's not unique. So there are many ways how you can choose a billion observers, and so the answer will be different depending on how you choose. So that brings me to the second part. Okay, there's also a minor problem. We're not interested in observers that have been created and then destroyed through some manipulation. We're interested in long-lived observers that can make an observation, like supernova observation, if you want to explain the cosmological concept. Okay, the solution that people propose is basically very easy. You just order all of the observers one by one, so write numbers on all of them, and then consider some large set of first n observers and put a measure on that set. And then you take this n to infinity, and if your answer doesn't change, then that's your method. Of course, there are more than one way of ordering observers, and people like to use the word unbiased, so that you want to do this ordering without any prior knowledge of the geometry that you live in or other processes. So basically, what we're actually interested in, we want to put forward the following principle. We observe a random observation in a generalized sense so that we allow picking an object on the infinite set. Okay, and so to address this question, there are two ways, two proposals that were put forward. And one is often used by Valenkin and Linda, is so-called global approach. So they take only a single realization of initial condition, follow it forward in time. And of course, by doing some slicing, they put the measure on this realization. And of course, this answer will depend on the type of slicing you're using. And this problem was understood in the early days by both of them. So what they say is maybe there's a preferred slicing, which will give you a natural way of defining the probabilities. Now, more recently, Busso said, well, why do we only take a single realization of initial condition? Let's take a single word line, but from different realization of initial conditions and forward in time. And that's, of course, a different approach, which I'll come at the end. So first, let me go into this more standard way of.
But why is second flexibility cannot be reduced to the first one if you impose initial conditions on engine hypersurface?
Yes, you can do that. But then you have to evolve infinite hypersurface, and it's not possible. You always cut something and go forward. Yes.
It's better always to cut some big pieces.
Okay, well, sure. But what they say, regardless of what you choose as initial condition, you get the same answer. So why bother choosing other initial conditions? And Busa said that that's not right. The answer must depend on the initial condition. But in either case, you are missing some observers. You're not counting all of the observers. Okay, so the global approach could be described easily by three stochastic processes. Let's assume there is some known stochastic process that generates the geometry of the eternal Euclidean space-time. So it would look something like this. And then let's say there is another process that colors it or introduces the content of this geometry. So in this case, I colored different bubbles by different colors. So I'm thinking about the cosmological constant. And the third project process, which will create, in some, again, random order, will create observers. So I put 2 points here because I want the observer to be an extended in time object, because after you've been created by a stochastic process, it will take time for you to evolve before you can make an observation. Okay, so and then we want to ask a question: what is generalized random observation would be with this setup if we know everything? So if we know all those three processes, and again, this question does not have a unique answer. So so the answer will depend on the cutoff procedure that you choose. Okay, so maybe simply we should consider first a 2D Euclidean space, which is easier to see what the problem is. So you should consider not just a square, but an infinite two-dimensional Euclidean space. And you color everything in black and white by some random process. And then you ask, and you also put some random points by another stochastic process. And then you ask, what is the probability of the point to be white? And the answer on this question is not known. Well, because there is infinitely many of such points. Not known if you color everything in black. The answer is still not known. It's only when you define some kind of cutoff, the answer will be given. Okay, so what kind of cutoff can you have? Well, let's consider the most trivial one, a spherical cutoff. It just choose a single point, reference point, and then order all of the red dots by the distance from this point. Then this ordering will define you a generalized random point in this, and once you take the limit to infinity, you want to also prove that unique and does not depend on the choice of the initial point. In fact, for the stochastic process, it's easy to prove. If you take two separate points, then as your radius goes to infinity, the common area will grow as area, and the places which do not match will grow as a surface. So we will always get more of the common stuff. Now, it's also possible to prove it that if you use some other cutoff, maybe not spherical, maybe some square cutoff or something like this. But of course, our universe is more complicated than this. And is there a natural way of extending this type of cutoff to the eternal inflation? Now, in Minkowski and De Sitter space-time, there is a problem because the full volume on a finite proper distance is infinite. So what you want to have, you want to start with some finite number of observers and then take it to infinity, but this is not the case, apparently. However, in 1+1 landscape models, with at least one ADS vector, this volume will be finite, and everything is well-defined. But again, we're not interested in single points, we're interested in observation, which are extended object. Okay, so let me proceed. So this is the setup of the problem. So apart from all this, we should do some mathematical calculations now. We know exactly what we want to calculate, so how do we do that? So the tunneling rate per unit time could be given by this matrix kappa. Let's not worry about how we calculate kappa for now. But basically, we are interested. So this is a rate per unit time of a world line that is currently in vector I, j to tunnel to vector I. And with this kappa metric, you can define the matrix probability currents for cylindricals, which is will describe how you your world lines leak from one vector to another. Then it was also shown by Garriga, Belenkin, and Guth that this kappa metric is not gauge invariant, so this metric will change depending on the velocity with respect to the moving frame. Okay, so then let me skip through this because I'm running out of time. But basically, if you want to do the calculations now for any gauge, for any time slicing, so this is a cartoon picture of your conformal diagram of your landscape. So basically, each world line goes from one vector to another. And then what do you expect to observe is to live near the surface of those bubbles. So basically, what you want to do as your constant time slices increase, you want to calculate the ratio of those observers living in relative vector. And to do this, first you want to find a stationary volume distribution on this cutoff surface as time goes becomes very large. And this is just given by a dominant eigenvector with the largest eigenvalue. So you just solve this equation and get some exponential solution. So vector S gives you the relative distributions in different vectors. But this is a volume distribution. From this, you can calculate what people call the Boltzmann civilization, so which can evolve into existence due to quantum and thermal fluctuation in an arbitrary space-time point. Now, from this, once you got this volume, stationary volume distribution, you can calculate the frequency of bubbles that form as you advance your constant time cutoff further in time. So this is a necessary second step that you must perform. Because what you want to calculate at the end of the day, not the volume distribution, not the distribution of bubbles, but the distribution of observers that live below your constant time slice. And basically, to do it exactly, you want to calculate, so the earlier bubble is created, the more observers it will have. So that, so illustrative purposes, I put this only. So the observers, the number of observers grow exponentially depending on what type of bubble you're in, but then the number of bubbles also grows exponentially. So both those terms give an important contributions. And once you calculate the abundance of observers, you want to take into account both of this. So this is going to be a double integral with some sum or whatever. And of course, to do this integral, I need this Li, which, I mean, we don't know what it is, but it has to be something which we think is proportional, which is like the probability for life to evolve within a given space volume. And it will be also a function of the time of slow roll and the number of e-folding of slow roll. So if your bubble tunneled and then it had some expansion, that will give you more volume and more place for observers to evolve. So this is now similar to what Belenkin and Linz are doing, but now it's accurate calculations in a way because we are not hand-waving, we are not giving hand-waving arguments of what kind of observers we should or should not count. We count everything below the cutoff. Okay, and then with two assumptions, then this integral formula can be greatly simplified to the following form, and basically the results do look similar to the results that Linda obtained, but there are some differences in the denominator. They perhaps, for some landscape models, they're just not important. You can also include the bubble collisions, but let's not talk about it. So now the answer, the final answer that we want to get, so what is the asymptotic distribution of observers? And that is given by this massive formula. This can also put some bounds on the landscape models if we do not want a typical observer to be nucleated by thermal flotation, like the Boltzmann civilization, that we must satisfy this. So for any given landscape model, you can just plug it in and see if the results are okay. Okay, so good. So now let me go to the type of models that Busso is talking about. So he's taking a bunch of points on the initial condition, surface of initial conditions. Again, this could be a disjoint regions or, and he's not speculating anything about what gives the initial conditions. He said it's a separate problem, so let's not discuss. And then he follows the world line of these points until they enter an AGS vector and die in a singularity. And as he follows it, he counts the total, the bubbles that are created along each one of them, each world line. And as the number, and of course, if there is an AGS vector, each world line will enter an AGS vector with probability 1. So, but to take your procedure to infinity, to get more and more bubbles, it takes the number of points to infinity. Okay, so and this calculation is done again using that Kappa matrix that I introduced earlier, but it has to be normalized now. Then also you have to introduce this so-called Weinberg matrix, which will tell what is the probability, which is the function of the probability for life to evolve again within a given bubble. But let's not talk about this. Apart from what this magic number is, there are still problems. And the problems are first, as I said, the initial conditions. We don't know what it is. But there is a second problem. Depending on what ensemble of observers you choose, your answer will vary. And so Busso put forward this formula. And that's when you treat all the bubbles equally. When you treat all of those geodesics equally, you get a different formula. And if you treat all the observers equally, you get even a third formula. But without even, you know, going and proving to you why this is the case, let us just discuss this sleeping beauty problem, which became very popular for them in the philosophy community. So there's a lot of papers appearing every month. I'm not following them, but so basically this problem is related. So if you're not sure which one of those three answers is correct, you just should consider the sleeping beauty problem. And if you give me the answer, I'll tell you which one, which answer would correspond to the foremost on the previous slide. OK, so what is the problem? We take a beauty. Doesn't have to be beautiful, but anyways, we put her to sleep. And then we toss a fair coin. And the coin can either be tails or heads. And if they're heads, then we put, then we awake her once, and then we put her to sleep again. Now, if a coin falls tails, then we do it twice. So first, we awake her, put her to sleep, then we give her some memory erasing drug without any side effects, so there are no headaches, nothing. And then she wakes up again, and we put her to sleep again. Now, after this, that's it. She will sleep forever. We'll never bother her again. Okay, and she knows that we are going to do this. So if the heads, we'll put her to sleep once and awake once. If she's if the tails, we'll put her to sleep twice and awake twice. Now, the questions then philosophers stumbling about and cannot answer is the following. When she awakes, what should her credence be that the coin fell heads? So what's her probability distribution should be that the coin fell heads? And okay, so there are obviously two possible answers, and those two guys cannot agree. So one of them says it's a third, well, because she's waking up more times in the, you know, if the coin falls tails. But then there is another answer, one half, which is also reasonable, because when the beauty wakes up, she doesn't get any new information after that. So her probability distribution shouldn't be exactly the same. Okay, so I'm not going to take vote which one of this is your favorite, but you just choose one. And if you choose one, then those should be your favorite formulas. So if it's 1/3, then Pusa is right. And that's your probability distribution of observers. And if Lewis is right, and I'm right, and that's the formula. Okay, so no question about the beauty. Good. All right, so let's see. What do I have? Have some conclusions. Okay, so I hope I've showed you that in general, random observer does not exist, and otherwise you have some problems in paradoxes. So you should adopt some generalized definition of the observer. Then for the measuring procedures like the global ones that Delenkin and Linda are using, you must perform those three steps calculation in order to calculate the observers, not the bubbles or the volumes. And so I put forward the spherical measure that seems to be the most symmetric Lorentz invariant measure. And it's the measure is independent of the initial choice of a reference point. Then I also discussed the local approach that Pusa likes, but there are again problems of the initial conditions, and also there is ambiguity of the choice on the ensemble. But I guess if you answered on the question of the sleeping beauty, then you can, without any ambiguity, answer the measure problem as well. Okay, thank you.
One thing I'm always confused about is,
good.
When you're making this counting argument, are there horizons that separate the different parts of the universe enough so that one should not really count things behind your horizon?
So you should only count something in your horizon right now, today.
Yeah, I'm asking.
No. That's a good measure. It's a finite measure. You will not get any, so you will not have a problem with the infinite number of observers.
Right.
And your answer will be with 100 probability of a chance will live in a lambda, 10^-120, and you are perfect.
But is there even a case? Can you make me sympathetic with people who say we should count behind the horizon when I have no experiment that will ever?
Okay.
Is it a theoretical fence?
Right. Okay. So what they say, the life evolves into existence randomly, and we are in some cases, which I don't understand, we are random. Okay, so I'm trying to make sense out of this, but that's what people are trying to. And if we are random, we should not be looking only at this realization of the randomness, but we should look at the ensemble of all possible observers, and then there'll be some probability distribution for us to be here, but there'll be also a tail of this distribution. And if you do obtain this distribution, you naturally, if such a distribution exists, then you would naturally think that most likely should be, in the middle. Now you can ask, well, there's only one test that we can perform, to check whether we're in the middle. But that's not true, because if there are more than one anthropic parameter, if there are some other constants that vary from it, that's another test for the anthropic system. The only tricky part is that the number of observers in this interpretation is in. Now, if you can show and come up with some principle that will say that no, there isn't an infinite number, so there is only a finite number, then you are done, because it's very easy to calculate the answer once you do that. But you, if you believe that there is an infinite number of observers, then you're stuck with this problem. Okay, did I answer the question? No.
I think so. You answered it.
I'm not. I cannot say anything about philosophy.
Right.
Mathematically, it's
no,
very.
No, in fact, that's my worry: is that what's happening on the other side of when you're counting, when you start counting on the other side of the horizon. Is that philosophy? Is that?
It's definitely mathematics. The problem may be philosophy. Once you said, okay, that's my cutoff, let's do the counting. That's mathematics. Okay, but. So what I wanted to say that anthropic principle alone doesn't give you a unique prescription of counting. We need something else So you know, even if you don't like the anthropic principle, there's something else missing, which you have to add in order to, you know, make some predictions. Anthropic principle alone doesn't give you any predictions.